Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 57, Satyajit Murdered, the Jewel Returned, text number 35 and 36. We'll see how we go. We might go to the end of the chapter. This is a good one. Puja yet vabi bashyanam.
Pujayit
Vabhi Bhashyanam.
Pujayit Vabhi Bhashyanam.
Kathayit Va Priyakatha.
Kathayit Va Priyakatha.
Kathayit Va Priyakatha.
Kathayit Va Priyakatha.
Vignata kila chitagya.
Vignata kila chitagya.
Vignata kila chitagya.
Vignata kila chitagya.
Smayamana uvachaha.
Smayamana uvachaha.
Smayamana uvachaha.
Smayamana uvachaha.
Nano dana pate nyatstas.
Nano dana pate nyatstas.
Nano dana pate nyatstas.
Nano dana pate nyatstas.
Twa aste shata shata. Twa yaste shata vana.
Twa yaste shata vana.
Twa yaste shata. Shatavana. Syamantako Mani Shriman.
Syamantako Mani Shriman.
Syamantako Mani Shriman.
Syamantako Mani Shriman.
Vidita Purvam Evana.
Vidita Purvam Evana.
Vidita Purvam Evana.
Vidita Purvam Evana.
Should be honoring. Abhibhashya.
Abhibhashya.
Greeting.
Greeting.
Enam.
Enam.
Him.
Him.
Akrura. Katayva. Discussing. Priya.
Priya.
Pleasant.
Pleasant.
Kata.
Kata.
Topics.
Topics.
Vigyata.
Vigyata.
Fully aware.
Fully aware.
Akila,
Akila.
Of everything. Chitta.
Chitta.
Akruras.
Akruras.
Heart.
Heart.
Gya.
Gya.
Knowing.
Knowing.
Smayamana.
Smayamana.
Smiling.
Smiling.
Uvachaha.
Uvachaha.
He said.
He said.
Nanu.
Nanu.
Surely.
Surely.
Dana.
Dana.
Of charity.
Of charity.
Pate.
Pate.
O Master.
O Master.
Nyasta.
Nyasta.
Kept.
Kept.
Twayi.
Twayi.
In your care.
In your care.
Aste.
Aste.
Is present.
Is present.
Shatadvana.
Shatadvana.
Vashatadvan.
Vashatadvan.
Shamantaka Mani.
Shamantaka Mani.
The Shamantaka Jewel.
Shamantaka Jewel.
Shriman.
Shriman.
Opulent.
Opulent.
Vidita.
Vidita.
Known.
Known.
Purvam.
Purvam.
Beforehand.
Beforehand.
Eva.
Eva.
Indeed.
Indeed.
Na.
Na.
By us.
By us.
Translation and purport by disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Lord Krishna honoured Akrura, greeted him confidentially and spoke pleasant words with him. Then the Lord, who was fully aware of Akrura's heart by virtue of his being the knower of everything, smiled and addressed him, O Master of Charity, surely the opulent Shamantaka Jewel was left in your care by Shatadvana and is still with you. Indeed, We have known this all along. Purport. Lord Krishna's treatment of Akrura here confirms that he is actually a great devotee of the Lord. So, this is Akrura returning to Dwarka at the request of Lord Krishna. As you know, that when Akrura had left Dwarka, apparently there were seemingly calamities and disturbances going on within the city. That, as we know, that wherever Krishna is present, then there can be no disturbances. In fact, wherever there is a great devotee present, Prabhupada explains, and there shouldn't be any natural disturbances or pestilence or tribulation. So when Akrura had left, seemingly these things were going on within the city of Dwarka, but as we know, Krishna was present there. So by his arrangement, these things were actually happening. And these things were going on simply so that Akrura could be brought back into Dwarka again. Akrura explained, had actually left Dwarka. How do you pronounce it properly? Dwarka. I always never get that one right. Dwarka. Okay. Dwarka. So Akrura had left Dwarka, and he had left because he's feeling guilty that that he was involved in this murder of Satrajit. Now, interestingly, we know that in this purport here, it's explained that Akrura is actually a great devotee of the Lord, so how could he actually be involved in such a heinous activity as the murder of Satrajit, who obviously was, we heard in the previous chapter, was looking after the Shamataka jewel. So Prabhupada explains, I think it's in the Krishna book, he explains that Akrura was actually a terrorist. He was a terrorist. And why was he a terrorist? Because he had stricken terror into the heart of all the residents of Vrindavan, especially the gopis. Because what had Akrura done? He had taken Krishna out of Vrindavan. So he was seen as the greatest terrorist by the gopis. How could Akrura take away our most beloved object, Sri Krishna? Because as we know, in Vrindavan, Krishna is the most dearly beloved by everyone. He's the soul of all souls. So to have him removed caused great lament within the hearts of the residents of Vrindavan. So they thought Akrura was a terrorist, so they cursed him. So therefore he was seemingly caught up in this intrigue which involved the murder of Satrajit. But of course we know actually he's a very exalted devotee of Lord Krishna. So Lord Krishna made all these arrangements for these disturbances and calamities to seemingly go on, even though he was personally present within Dwarka, so Akrura could be brought back into the association of the Dwarka Vasis. So as we know here, that Krishna is fully cognizant of what's going on within everyone's heart. He explains it in the Bhagavad Gita that what's the verse? That I'm in the hearts of all living entities. I know past, present, and future. How does that verse go? Yeah, Hridesha and Rishisti. There's another one though that I'm the giver of knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. How does that verse go? Yeah, Savasjam Hridi Sanirin Mate Smriti Ganam Apohanamcha. That's right. So Krishna is in the heart of all living things, and he knows what's going on within the heart of everyone. So he knows what's going on with Akrura. He knows that Akrura has left. He knows that Akrura actually has a Shamantaka jewel. So now he's been brought back into Krishna's presence, and how does Krishna greet him? Greets him very, very nicely. Once again, Krishna is setting the example of how to greet a saintly personality, how one should greet a devotee very nicely. Offers him pleasant words, priya kata, nice topics, gives him a nice smile, sma yamana, this smiling of Krishna. So obviously this receiving a smile from Krishna is the greatest benediction for the devotee. It's explained, Rupa Goswami explains in the Nectar of Devotion how all the inhabitants of Dwarka were very, very satisfied by seeing the smiling face of Krishna. Because when a devotee receives a smile from Krishna, they know that Krishna is satisfied. And for a devotee, that's the greatest benediction, to know that Krishna is satisfied with your service. So Prabhupada explains that this is the goal of the devotees in the ISKCON movement, is to receive the smile from Krishna's face. That's the benediction for all of the devotees' hard work and sincere endeavour to please Krishna, is that Krishna will smile upon us. So if we are doing our services very nicely in the right consciousness, then Krishna will smile and rain his mercy upon us. So in this way, our crew is being greeted very nicely by Lord Krishna. Very, very nicely. Krishna sets the example of how to greet a saintly personality. So when Krishna is greeting in this way, then also devotees take note. This is how we should greet a very saintly personality. Nice words, with a smile and so forth. Very, 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 very pleasant. So we'll move on to the next verse from here. This is text number 37. Since Satyajit had no sons, his daughter's sons should receive his inheritance. They should pay for memorial offerings of water and pinda, clear their grandfather's outstanding debts, and keep the remainder of inheritance for themselves. Purport. Srila Sridhar Swami quotes the following Smriti injunction regarding inheritance. Patni dihi taras chaiva pitaro brataras tata tatsuta gotra ja bandhu shisya sa brahmacharina. The inheritance goes first to the wife, then, if the wife has passed away, to the daughters, then to the parents, then to the brothers, then to the brothers' sons, then to family members of the same gotra as the deceased, and then to his disciples, including brahmacharis. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur adds that since Satyajit had no sons, since his wives were killed together with him, and since his daughter Satyabhama was not interested in the Shamataka jewel, which constituted the inheritance, it rightfully belonged to her sons. In Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Srila Prabhupada explains, Lord Krishna indicated by the statement that Satyabhama was already pregnant, her son would be the real claimant of the jewel, and would certainly take the jewel from Akrura if he tried to conceal it. Mm-hmm. So these are obviously some of the social customs and social etiquettes found within Vedic civilization. As you know, the Srimad Bhagavatam sets the proper standard and example for proper human conduct and societal standards to be followed by human beings within the Vedic injunctions. So here we're reading about some of the injunctions regarding inheritance, who's a rightful claim to inherit the wealth and so forth from the deceased father. So it explains the whole parampara personalities it goes to the wife and then to the daughters and to the parents and so forth and on like this. So everything is there within Vedic culture. There is no lack within Vedic culture, including how to follow correct social etiquettes regarding the passing away of a personality as well. So everything was in there. So we see now what happens in modern day society. You can see so many examples of when someone passes away, and even though there may be a will in place, and in the will it's supposed to be overseeing where the wealth and so forth is given to within the family, and so many times we see what happens is that the family starts arguing and they contest the will. They're not happy with what they've received, thinking, oh, why is this Uncle Joe got more when I was had a better relationship with Fred, so why is Joe getting this? So they begin arguing, and so many squabbles take place within the family about who's inheriting the wealth, who's getting the house. So many problems there. You see, modern day society is so complicated and so difficult. Very, very, very difficult. And you see now also, even with husband and wife relationships, very difficult as well, that now they have a thing called prenuptial, where you'll sign an agreement before you actually get married, that if just in the unlikely event of there being a separation, then you'll receive this and I'll receive that amount of the wealth. So many difficulties are there. Was it Paul McCartney, good example of that, the ex-Beatle. He married some ex-model, and after a short time is separated, and now she's taken to the cleaners, taken like $700 million of his wealth or something. So many problems in Kali Yuga, so many difficulties. But we see within Vedic culture everything is set very nicely. People understand if they follow the etiquettes and the social standards properly, then everything is peaceful. That's the whole goal of Vedic culture, so people's minds are peaceful. And when one's mind is peaceful, then one can focus on self-realization and spiritual cultivation and God consciousness. Now you can see within Kali Yuga, people have forgotten the purpose of human life is actually meant for using a higher intelligence for cultivating God consciousness. So as a result, people's intelligence and endeavors are going into making things more and more complicated. Now life is very, very complicated in Kali Yuga. Very, very complicated. Even though devotees try to live very simply, still so many complications are going on. Like we had an example in the city, was it yesterday morning? They had to shut down the whole city for most of the half a day because there had been some domestic dispute in the city between a man and a wife. I don't know the full details of it, but a few people had been shot over an altercation between a man and a woman. I think one man just being off on his way to work, you know, just starting a normal day on his way to work, and then saw something going on, tried to intervene to kind of help out the lady, and then he ended up getting shot and killed. Some other young guy obviously got involved and he was shot as well. So, Kali Yuga, you know, in the very start, first thing in the morning, 8 o'clock in the morning, and this is going on, the whole city is shut down as a result. Helicopters flying around, people couldn't leave their work site, they had to stay in their building, people couldn't go into the city. So many complications, and Kali just like that, a snap of the fingers, so many complications, a drop of a hat. So in Kali Yuga, in Vedic times, when Vedic culture is being followed, things are more peaceful this way. We can see here that even we have a case here that actually Satyajit was murdered. So even though he was murdered, still there were obviously there was lamentation and things going on, but there were proper social etiquettes being followed. I think it even explains that Lord Krishna oversaw the funeral rites for Satyajit. I think it explains here as well that it wasn't just Satyajit who was murdered, but also it explains that his wives were also killed along with him as well. I don't know if that actually explained that earlier on in some of the texts we were reading, but it wasn't just Satyajit who was murdered, but it was also his wives as well. So obviously quite an abominable activity. Shut it down. So even in Vedic times these problems were going on as well, but obviously there was ways of dealing with these things nicely. How to proceed onwards with life, even though there were disturbances and calamities going on then as well. So in Kali Yuga, obviously, these calamities and disturbances are more and more prominent. Every day there's a new disaster, a new problem. Like we had, it was in Indonesia at the moment. There's I think a mining company was mining for some coal or oil or natural gas or something in Indonesia. And they dug something like 3 kilometres into the ground, into the earth, and some of it hit some area of high pressure, and as a result this high pressure was being released through the borehole, and over a very short period of time, a matter of a few weeks, and this whole area in Indonesia, these villages, got inundated with mud, completely covered over. So people's homes were covered, businesses were covered, people lost their lives. And it's still going on now, that this release of this borehole is still going on. It's just flooding this entire area within the main island of Indonesia. So in Kali Yuga, there's always something going wrong, continuously going on. But of course, people don't understand. Like we see here, it was interesting to note that when these disturbances are going on within Dwaraka, people didn't say, "Where's the scientists? Where's the scientists? We need the scientists to tell us why these problems and why these calamities are happening for." They understood that there was an effect, but they understood there was a cause for that effect as well. And Kali Yuga people don't realise that there's a cause. We look at the effects and we try and analyse them scientifically, like with global warming and like when there's a big earthquake or a tsunami or whatever it may be. We try and analyse it through scientific understanding. But we understand that there's an effect, but there's a cause to that. And of course, we understand the cause. Ultimately, Krishna is the cause of all causes. Ishvara Parama Krishna Sachidan Vigraha, he's the cause of all causes. But we understand that in Kali Yuga that these disturbances are going on, the cause is because people's sinful activity. That material nature reciprocates with the level of consciousness with that human beings are living by. So we understand in Kali Yuga people are living very impious, sinful lives. And as a result of that, then there have to be natural disturbances. In material life, people think that they don't make a connection between uncontrolled senses and distress. People try and separate the two things, thinking that if we just get on with our lives very nicely and just focus on our sense enjoyment, and this way we'll minimise distresses. But with civilization, which is being dictated to by uncontrolled senses, and there will be calamities. This is the way material nature works. You can't separate the two. You need to join the two together. That if I have uncontrolled senses, then there will be disturbances. Just how it works. Krishna explains it in the Bhagavad Gita that through uncontrolled senses, then, as it verse go, that one understands that one cannot be happy. A wise person understands they cannot be happy. Through engaging the senses and sense activity. That theme is stipulated many times throughout the Bhagavad Gita. Was it Yahi Samspasha Bhagavacha? That uncontrolled senses bring distress. So Krishna emphasizes that many times in the Bhagavad Gita. So an educated society will understand that point, that civilization begins where the populace is educated in sense control. And understands that human life with higher intelligence is meant for cultivating God consciousness and God realization. Living simply. Like Prabhupada says that, gives that verse in the Nectar of Instruction, Achahara Prayasas Cha, Pajalpo Ni Magraha, Jana Sango, Jana Sango, how's the rest of it go? Jana Sango, Chaloyam Cha. Sabir Bhaktir Vinashyati, that these six activities are meant to be followed by human civilization, because if these principles aren't followed, then bhakti or devotional service won't take place, will be destroyed. So it's a very, very important verse actually to meditate on. I was reading that this morning thinking it's a very, very pertinent verse for devotees at all stages of devotional life actually. Achyahara Prayasascha. Achyahara means overeating or over-collecting. So obviously if one can't control the tongue, the verse in the Bhagavad, in the Nectar of Instruction, Vachravya Manasaha Krodavagam, if one can't control the urge to speak or the urge to eat, then causes many difficulties in spiritual life. So we see devotees, if you can't control the tongue and overeat, it causes so many problems in your spiritual life. It's difficult to get up in the morning. You feel lethargic. You don't feel very inspired to, want to engage in the process of bhakti by overeating. Also over-collecting. Also, achahara can also mean over-collecting. Over-collecting obviously can mean not just in terms of material assets, but also bhakti. So in Sarasvati Kaur explains achahara can also mean over-collecting mundane knowledge. Well, you can see now when you go to the libraries, there's so many books of philosophy on economic development, so many books that you can read. But Bhakti Saranda Sarada says this is a form of over-collecting, filling up your head with so much nonsensical information. And you can see, actually, it's amazing. I was thinking about this the other day. It's amazing what your mind retains. Like I was remembering conversations I had when I was a kid. I actually remember the conversations I had. Remember some of the books I used to read when I was a kid. I won't get into them, but it's amazing what your mind actually retains and when it sometimes manifests back in the consciousness again, because the mind is just like a sponge, it's just absorbing everything into it. So obviously what you're putting into your mind affects your consciousness, the way you think. In fact, everything you put into your consciousness affects the way you think, the way you see things, the way you behave, the way you interact with other people around you as well. So over-collecting things, absorbing things into the sponge of the mind. You have to be very careful what you absorb in there. You can read so many things you can read, newspapers, so many things on the internet, books you can read. But if they're not actually helping us cultivate Krishna consciousness, then actually what's the use, really? If it's not helping you come closer to Krishna or develop deeper understanding of Krishna, then what's the use? And besides that, we've got so many books to read within Krishna consciousness. Bhagavatam, there's Chaitanya Charitamrita, so many new books are coming out, a commentary by Birajan Prabhu on the Srimad Bhagavatam, so many sannyasis and other older devotees are writing so many books now, Hari Sauri's books, The Transcendental Diary. I mean, there's actually no reason for us to read anything else outside of Krishna consciousness. I find that when you do read things not related to bhakti, it just disturbs your mind, really. Because when you read things like newspapers and mundane media reports, I mean, it's, all it's reporting on is actually the material world. And like Krishna says, the material world is temporary and full of misery. So that's all you're reading about, this temporary and full of misery, the kleshas. That's all you're filling your head with is this kind of things of the material world, but actually it doesn't do anything for your spiritual development. I mean, of course, it may help seeing the material for what it is. It is obviously not the place to be, but the higher principle is to cultivate knowledge of Krishna, develop love for Krishna. So achahara, achahara prayasas cha. Achahara prayasas. Prayasas meaning over-endeavouring for things very difficult to attain. Over-endeavouring. So this is also a principle to follow as well, not to over-endeavour for things difficult to achieve. Because obviously, to achieve something in a material sense, to maintain some material wealth or opulence, it takes a lot of endeavour. And you can see that these things actually just distract you from the real goal of life, which is cultivating Krishna consciousness. Now, in Kali Yuga especially, there's so many things as to trick you into thinking that they're important to have. You must have this, you must have that. But endeavouring for these things, it takes such great endeavour to achieve anything, like to get great wealth or to get assets or whatever it may be. It's a great endeavour. And if this endeavour isn't actually helping you cultivate Krishna consciousness, or isn't some way tied back to serving Krishna in some way, then it's just an over-endeavour, a waste of time, which just distracts you from the real goal of life. So achahara prayasacha, pajalpo, obviously unnecessary talking, pajalpa, unnecessary speaking. So we can see that when non-devotees associate with one another, then if, you know, sometimes you overhear non-devotee topic conversations when they're speaking, and it's usually pretty irrelevant, boring, mundane subject matter. Politics, the economy, wealth, what you saw on YouTube, what was on TV last night, so many things that they can talk about, but it's prajalpa. It's explained that, like the croaking of frogs. When the frogs are out in the wild grass, they are croaking, speaking to each other. Yeah, I'm here, where are you? Rabbit, rabbit. Well, what's this doing? What's it actually doing when the frogs are croaking? What's it doing? It's attracting the snake. And the snake will come along and kill it. So actually they're inviting death by talking nonsense. So silly human beings too, who speak prajalpa the whole time, speak about subject matter not related to spiritual consciousness or elevating consciousness, and it's inviting death. Death is coming every day with the rising and setting of the sun. It's one day closer to passing away. So the croaking of frogs is going on the TV, on the radio, on the internet, just croaking of frogs, inviting death. So devotees, obviously, and the associated devotees, that Prabhupada established the society so we could avoid prajalpa and talk about something actually with substance and benefit, which is Krishna Katha, topics of Krishna. Now Prabhupada would say within that realm of Krishna Katha, there's actually two forms of Krishna Katha. One is talking about the miseries of material existence, and the other one is obviously talking and glorifying and celebrating Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Prabhupada would say that both sorts of Katha have to be there, simply because of one is talking about the miseries of the material world, and one actually, it helps to become detached from it. But of course we don't dwell on that. We don't get all negative and dwell on the negative side of things of Kali Yuga, and it's all suffering and adiyama, klesha, and of course it has to be there to a degree. Prabhupada would say that it's devotees should have a healthy pessimism or attitude towards the material energy. We understand that it's temporary, it's not the proper place to be, that we're trying to become detached from it. But the upside of that is we glorify Krishna through kirtan, and obviously through chanting, through japa, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, reading Srila Prabhupada's books, associating with devotees, talking Krishna Katha. it's a famous verse in the Bhagavad Gita that devotees derive great satisfaction by talking about subjects of me. So this is how devotees associate, through talking topics of Krishna Katha, enlivens the heart. The heart becomes actually elevated. It feels very satisfying when you've had a spiritual discussion with somebody. Like so many people, after we've had our classes at the Urban Yoga Center, some people are very satisfied by being able to have a discussion about spiritual subject matter, and they sit down and take prasadam and then can discuss more about spiritual subject matter. When you're distributing books, sometimes you can find that as well, that people, you're talking with people and they take the book and you've had an exchange with them, and you're kind of ready to move on to the next person, but they want to stay and they want to talk. They want to talk more about it, because people don't often have an opportunity to speak spiritual subject matter. And you can actually, most people are talking about, with the association they have, is this very limited, mundane subject matter. So when they come in contact with the devotee, and we take it for granted, it's just like we're devotees, we talk about Krishna. But sometimes we forget that non-devotees don't have that opportunity to speak about spiritual subject matter, because most of the subject matter they're talking about is just sense gratification, what they're doing that weekend, how drunk they got, how wasted they got that following night, these things. So actually, by going out and giving them opportunity to associate with devotees, people appreciate that. Here's an opportunity to have a discussion about something I don't usually get to speak about. So, Prajalpo, Krishna Katha. Prajalpo Niyamagraha. So, Niyamagraha. Agraha, Prabhupada explains, can mean accepting or rejecting. And Niyama means rules and regulations. So, Niyamagraha, for devotees, it means just following Prabhupada's explanation is following rules and regulations just for the sake of following them, but not for actually making spiritual advancement, or else rejecting the rules and regulations altogether, acting whimsically or independently. So obviously devotees have to avoid both things. Oh, that's my phone. Don't worry about it. It's probably my wife. Oh, no, she's here. So, Niyamagraha. As we can see that superficially following rules and regulations, not for the purpose of making advancement of spiritual life, actually doesn't help somebody. So we have to understand the reason for why we're doing activities for in Krishna consciousness. So we spoke about in the last class I gave is all the rules and regulations, smata vyasa tatam vishnu, all the rules and regulations are meant for remembering Krishna, not forgetting him. That's the reason we do everything in Krishna consciousness. Obviously, we know that famous story of the Brahmana and the cobbler. And a couple of years back, I did a play with it with Mooney and Shruti and Bhakta Gary and Vrindaranya. I don't know if you saw the play, but it's a good example of that, how this Brahmana, who's very, very proud and very knowledgeable, knows all the mantras and all these things, and very, very proud and pukkara and all these things, but he forgot the purpose of following Krishna consciousness, of following the Vedas, which is to love Krishna. Whereas the cobbler, very, very simple and very, very humble, knew the purpose of the Vedas, which is to love Krishna. So you can see this is a nice example of this Niyamagraha, following the rules and regulations externally, but not actually realizing the reason for doing the things. And we see that's a problem which many religions face now, is that many people go to churches or go to mosques and do all the external things, but don't look at the reason behind why they're doing them for. And the whole reason of following a religious faith is to understand the laws of God and to love God, reawaken your God consciousness. That's the purpose of following religion. So we can see people follow the externals or even become bewildered by their own scriptures and then do all sorts of nonsense activities and are forgetting the purpose is to reawaken your love for Godhead. And also following things as whimsically. Like we can see with Bhagavad Gita, so many different editions of Bhagavad Gita have been translated, but it's only Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita which has actually given the proper understanding, the correct Siddhanta of the Vedas, which is to obviously surrender to Krishna. So many different translations of Bhagavad Gita haven't actually given the proper Siddhanta, that the purpose of the Bhagavad Gita is to surrender to Krishna. So many speculations and interpretations and things are given. So these things will not help. So one has to follow the rules and regulations, and if you read the Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami goes into 64 different angas of devotional service, and how to reawaken your love for Krishna. So this is the reason for following Niyamagraha. Prajopo Niyamagraha. Did I cover six of them then? Two. Prajopo Niyamagraha. Janasangas, Chalolium Cha. So Janasangas, this association with worldly minded people. So obviously that people associate with, like it says, birds of a feather flock together. Now, people who are like-minded associate with one another. So there's jhana sanghas, or this association with worldly-minded people can also be vinashati, can destroy one's bhakti. Because associating with worldly-minded people, they're not interested in Krishna consciousness. Generally, people aren't interested in Krishna. That's why there's only a few of us in here and millions of others out there running off to work at the moment, because they're not necessarily... Because people have to do that sometimes, but generally people are not interested in hearing about Krishna, topics of Krishna. So one has to be very careful who they associate with, simply because you'll take on the qualities of those you associate with. So Prabhupada established this association of Vaishnavas so we could develop Vaishnava qualities. Obviously, you know, the 26 qualities of the devotee. There's a book written by, I think, Satsarup Das Goswami talking about the 26 qualities of the Vaishnava. So a Vaishnava associates with other Vaishnavas to cultivate these qualities, these devotional qualities. Whereas if you associate with worldly minded people, generally they're interested in sense gratification and economic development or some form of mundane politics. So devotees try to avoid that association as much as possible and associate with Vaishnavas, especially intimate association, because who you intimately associate with generally affects who you are and who you become. So devotees try to avoid very intimate association with non-devotees or worldly-minded people, because it's just a distraction from the real goal of life. Janasangas, cha lolyam cha. Lolyam, this greed, being very, very greedy for things. So obviously this can be a great impediment on the path of devotion, because devotees generally are supposed to live simply. That's what Prabhupada wanted devotees to live very simply, simple living and high thinking. So we can see that simple living obviously means, Prabhupada actually says in the Nectar of Instruction that one can live very, very peacefully just with having land and a cow. If everybody has had a bit of land and a cow, then one can live very, very happily. You know, you have the land so you can grow your grains and fruits and so forth, and you can take milk from the cow. So Prabhupada says that people, when they hear that, they think that we're going back to some medieval way of living. You just have a cow, have a bit of land and you'll be right. She'll be right, mate. So people think that's just some medieval way of living, but not at all. If one understands the goal of life is to cultivate God consciousness and spiritual realization, then one wants to live simply. But one understands, if the more you simplify your life, then the more the mind is peaceful, the less you have to get caught up in unnecessary things. And you see, it's so, for living in a Western civilization, it's so difficult. Very, very difficult living in a Western civilization. You have to work so hard just to maintain a basic standard of living. You have to work so many hours a week. Recently, statistics are coming out saying that people are now... because there's so much personal debt, because people aren't living within savings anymore. People actually have to base their lifestyles more on credit, which means they're borrowing money, which means it's accumulating interest rates. So now what people are doing is they're dipping into their superannuation funds in order to pay back personal debt. So what's going to happen is when they retire, there's going to be no money there, because it's all gone on debt servicing. So difficult, very, very difficult living in Kali Yuga. Just to maintain a basic standard of living is not easy. You have to work very hard for that. You get into debt in order to fund that lifestyle, and then obviously you have to pay interest on top of that. And I think in Australia at the moment, statistically, something like out of one in every 70 people who have a mortgage, banks are taking action to take their houses back from them because they're faulting on their payments on their mortgages. So you can imagine how much disturbance that will cause in people's minds, that your house is getting taken away from you. The place that your family and your family is taking shelter in is going to be taken away from you. So you can imagine the stress and anxiety people are going through in their minds with these things going on. So very, 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 very difficult to maintain a basic standard of living in Kali Yuga, especially in Western civilization. So in Krishna consciousness, we're just trying to educate people that human life is meant for cultivating God realization, becoming God conscious, because ultimately the real problems a birth, old age, disease and death. Repeated cycles of samsara, taking birth, dying again, taking birth again and dying. That's the real problem. So in Krishna consciousness, we're trying to educate people to this point that human life is meant for relieving oneself of these problems, getting out of the cycle of repeated birth and death. So in order to do that, obviously it's more beneficial to live more simply. Don't get caught up in this in the rat race, you know. Don't get caught up in it. What's the point? You're in a cycle of repeated birth and death. You've been in the rat race for so many births, lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. Why not do something to get out of it? You know, do something different. You know, make a change. So we try to educate people in the principles of how to live simply and how to cultivate God consciousness. That's what the Krishna consciousness movement is all about, how to educate people how to do that. So it's not that we're condoning going back to some medieval way of living. We encourage people to live simply because it's easier to cultivate God consciousness that way. So when people become very, very greedy, it's very difficult to see things properly. You forget what the purpose of life is when you become greedy. I've got to get this, I've got to get that, more. And as we know, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that these desires, they burn like fire and they're actually never satisfied. Your greed can never be satisfied. That's if one understands that simple secret that greed cannot be satisfied, then one is actually making some good headway for seeing how to use human life correctly. So many secrets obviously given within the Bhagavad Gita, but especially avoiding greed. These six enemies of the mind, you know, lust, anger and greed. That a devotee has to avoid these things at all costs, lust, anger and greed, because Krishna says that these are the three gateways or pathways leading into hellish existence, lust, anger and greed. So obviously if one is living a simple lifestyle, then it's easy to avoid these things. And especially through chanting Hare Krishna, then this lust, anger and greed can be mitigated from the heart, can be taken away from the heart. So that is why devotees try to live simply for and avoid greed. So they're nice points to meditate upon by Rupa Goswami in the Upadeshamrita about the six things which can destroy devotional service. Because as a practitioners of Krishna consciousness, we obviously want to make as much advancement as we can in the short time frame we've got, because realistically we don't know, you know, when we're going to die. And it could have been any one of us who was in the city yesterday morning and saw this altercation going on, and we just go up to try and help out the lady, and then suddenly, you know, find that we've got a gun pulled on us and someone shoots you dead. And it can happen to anyone. Just because we're devotees, it doesn't mean these things won't happen to us. So that's why we have to utilize human life for whatever time we have left in the most conducive way. In fact, Maharaj Parikshit was very fortunate. He knew he had 7 days left. He actually knew, I've got 7 days left to live. But we actually don't know how long we've got. We don't know. It could be a minute, could be 2 minutes. Imagine that today. Imagine that if you meditate upon that point, that today is the last day you're going to be alive. You know, for whatever reason, you go out there and then get bowled by a tram or hit by a bolt of lightning or something. So imagine that. It makes you quite sober, actually, if you think that way. Today could be the last day I'm alive. So what am I going to do today which is going to be of most benefit to me? Obviously, cultivating Krishna consciousness is going to be the most beneficial thing to do. So, yeah, nice instructions given within the Upanishamrita. So let's bring that back to the point that we were talking about, that this is what the Vedic culture and Vedic civilization is about, is how to utilize human life in the most beneficial way. So all of the social etiquettes and customs in Vedic culture are there to designed to make life peaceful, make human civilization as peaceful as possible, so one can focus on the real purpose of life. So when you read the Srimad Bhagavatam, it gives us some very nice insights into some of these social customs and etiquettes that are followed within Vedic culture. So, you know, we can stop there and ask if there's any points at all from what we were talking about or discussing. Who was, sorry?
Sakuchit.
Yeah, that's right.
But didn't they walk a half chintamani? Isn't that the most precious thing?
Transcendental touchstones?
Yes. So why did they need...
Well, I'm not sure if they have those in... I'm not sure if they have those in Warwicka. Definitely in Vrindavan there's touchstone trees there. Well, I think Krishna is more orchestrating this whole pastime, the Shaman Takajul, because he's teaching people a lesson. Yeah, like Krishna is orchestrating this whole thing of the Shaman Takajul just to show the futileness of being greedy for material things. Probably are.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, like it says, Krishna is, like Jayaprakash Goswami is explaining, that Krishna is appears and seemingly behaves like a human being. So these things that are seemingly going on, like Krishna is behaving like an ordinary human being. But as we said, Krishna is doing these things, to show us how to conduct human civilization properly, and also to establish that he's a supreme personality of Godhead. Yeah.
So Balaram is an expansion of that, with the Shyama Takajul, because his Lord's paraphernalia everywhere at all times. Not in this case.
I don't know if I've read that in the Bhagavatam.
No, I think Lord Balaram was an extension of Lord's paraphernalia.
Yeah. Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's not an extension of that, but he's created by Lord's eternal energy.
Yeah. Yeah. If it's being used in Krishna's service, yeah, definitely.
So
yeah. In this case here, we
how
we
know the expansion
in this case here that we can see the Shaman Takajul actually, because it wasn't being used in Krishna's service, and this is what was causing so many problems. Yeah, because Shatrajit was using it because he wanted the gold and wealth for himself, and then Akrura leaves the Dwarka so he can perform sacrifices and get gold and things. So we can see that when things aren't being used in Krishna's service, then that's what causes troubles. Yeah, so when things are being used in Krishna's service, then it is under the jurisdiction of Balaram's energy. Yeah, but when things aren't being used in Krishna's service, that's under the jurisdiction of Maya, Mahamaya. Yeah.
This tendency for over-collecting and over-endeavouring, that really seems to be one of the big traps, you know, even within ISKCON.
Mm. Yeah, it is, definitely.
Sometimes, you know, I can't help myself feeling even among senior devotees.
Yeah.
Very often we focus on externals, you know, we think everything has to be big.
Yeah.
Big temples, big programs, quick and big results.
Yeah. Yeah.
We neglect the internals, we neglect to actually care for the devotees.
Yeah.
Especially senior devotees.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Often they're kind of left out. I know people come, people go. It's like some machinery there.
Yeah.
And you wonder a little bit, well, where were the senior devotees, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I had a bit that realization when Tapas Kami was here.
I probably said, don't be surprised at the ones who leave, be surprised at the ones who stay. So probably says it's a simple process, but the application is difficult. So.
And he also says, you know, if somebody leaves, then 50% it's actually the senior devotee's fault.
Yeah.
So I think we have to take responsibility for those 50%.
Yeah, it's always a two-way thing, definitely. That it's important that there is a culture developed where there is respect and so forth for senior devotees, and if someone is struggling, that there is some sort of system there to help out devotees who are struggling as well. So that, yeah, definitely within the ISKCON society, that infrastructure, social infrastructure, really still is lacking in many areas, definitely. Yeah, I would agree.
I mean, that's what they're doing in the Chakpati Temple in Bombay, the council system. I really think this is what is coming into worldwide, isn't it? We actually have a problem to care for the devotees. We often think once a person joins, all right, now he's a devotee, no need to care for him anyway, he's one of our men, so now let it work, isn't it? We are very caring about people who haven't joined yet, but once they join, you know, then we start demanding, you know, but we don't give nourishment. And that giving nourishment has to be an ongoing process.
Yeah, definitely.
Especially also for seniors are very excellent.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely, yeah. Very important. Yeah. So, saying these, it's a real culture when you have those social kind of aspects to the society in place. Yeah. So you're definitely in that area. There's a lot of growth that needs to be taken by the society. Definitely. Yeah.
I actually have a very nice DVD that I offered the temple, so one evening maybe we can make a
film
night,
a movie
night.
Yeah, it'd be nice. Yeah.
Very beautiful. I gave it to Bhakti Prabhu and he was saying, wow, this is so fun. I said, no, we have to watch it all together. It's a professionally made movie.
Uh-huh.
Very nice.
Yeah, we could probably show it in the theatre one evening. We've got the projector and things in there. So even maybe just organise it with Aniruddha Prabhu. I'm sure he'll do that. Definitely. Put a little notice up on the thing out there. Let the devotees know. That'd be good.
Religions and bridging between faiths used in Krishna service. Sometimes knowledge is very useful. You know, if they send you to a symposium of scientists, it's good that you have some understanding and some knowledge to use it in Krishna's, you know, Krishna service. So, you know, I'm just mentioning.
Yes, for some devotees, yeah, for preaching purposes, some devotees may do that, like Sataputta and Drutakama Prabhu and so forth. But for the general devotees, not necessary. Some may do it for preaching purposes, but for general devotees, it's not necessary, unless you're using it for a specific preaching purpose. But otherwise, no need filling. I guess the principle is don't fill your head up with kind of trivial things which aren't really going to help out with your own Krishna consciousness. Yeah. But definitely, devotees like Sataputta and Drutakama have used their knowledge and understanding to make some headway for presenting to the scientific community in particular, and academic community for Krishna consciousness. So, yeah. If it's been used that way, fantastic. Yeah.
So if you meet scientists in the street and you're so excited about the latest puzzle pictures, you just negate them and say, no, no, no. Or, you know, we have another theory. Or how would you accept a scientist who met you in the street who said, look, I'm rather interested in what you're presenting? How would you communicate with him? If he was excited about the latest space discoveries and you're not interested in anything like that because it's part of the material creation of the Lord.
So what was the point, sorry?
The point was, if you met a scientist in the street in book distribution.
Me personally?
Yes, and he was very excited about the latest discoveries and the beauty of the material universe, which is beautiful too, you know, the photographs that have been brought back by Hubble telescope. So how would you communicate with him if you've never seen any of the pictures, you know, would you simply...
No, just... like Prabhupada said, find the spark and fan it. Say, well, if you're interested in that, imagine the creative force behind that. Would you be interested in finding a bit more about the creative force behind it?
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, simple as that. Any more questions or points at all then?
One comment about last time when we have Prabhupada said that green, the volume, we can use in Krishna service. The more the proportional service we do, the volume.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Prabhupada
said that's the only price devotees have to pay is greed or this intense volume
for
having Krishna.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Be lusty for Krishna. Be greedy for Krishna.
Yes.
Yeah. Any more questions or points at all then? Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.